Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Ever been to Antarctica? Maybe not, but if you find yourself there, make a note of a peak known as Mount Liptak. That mountain is named after Lester Liptak, the uncle of a Milwaukee filmmaker.
Ryan Alsop is the writer and director of a short film about his uncle's unique story in which he enlisted, underage, in the Navy during World War II. He was one of an estimated 200,000 underage soldiers in the war. Not that enlisting was easy or straightforward.
Don't get me wrong. The Navy needs plenty of able-bodied men. But we do need men.
Have a look. I'm 18.
You know, it's hard to believe a word you're telling me, son, when you don't look a day over 10 and a half.
The film is called Mount Liptak, and it is a snapshot of the circumstances that led Lester to enlist at age 15. Alsop spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski and explained how he came to learn his uncle's story.
Lester Liptak is a hero in my eyes. He also happens to be my uncle. But over the years, I've heard these stories of his life and his service in the Navy and all the things that he had done. And then it kind of all came to fruition this last Christmas when I heard the final story of how he had had a mountain named after him on Antarctica. And I just, being a filmmaker and one who tells a lot of stories and loves writing and stories, it just clicked. It was just the final thing, like, this is a movie right here. This is incredible. Mm-hmm. So it kind of clicked. And I just knew I had to shoot it, and I knew I had to write it. So spent the next 4, 5, 6 months kind of researching this whole topic of enlisting underage and how big of a story it actually is and how many people have never even heard of it before.
Right. Well, many of us have not heard of it. Do you imagine that so many people got to enlist underage just because of the scale of the war, that maybe the people in the services were more inclined to let certain things slide through?
Yeah. So while doing the research, and I've interviewed Lester countless times. He now currently lives in Florida. So while interviewing him countless times, I've asked him about others, and then I've gone through newspapers, books. Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of material out there. So I've gone through a lot of it and done a lot of research, and it all seemed that people almost looked the other way because times were so tough that there weren't many other options, and kids had to provide for their family and had to help in any way possible. I've read stories of teachers helping kids lie about their age to enlist. I've heard pastors helping their families, lie about their age. What Lester told me was that it was a very popular under-the-table type of thing that happened back then.
Okay. Yeah, and what Lester did was forge his baptismal certificate. But what were the circumstances that he was facing in which he felt that he had to enlist?
It's portrayed in the movie 100% accurately, but it doesn't seem real. It's crazy. I'll start from the beginning. His father was on strike at the local factory, and their family was struggling to get by. His dad was the only one providing any income, and they had a large family. And one day, they decided they couldn't do it anymore, so the dad had to go back to work, had to cross the picket line. And back then, that was a really big deal to cross the picket line. You just don't do it. From the countless interviews that I've done, Lester said, back then the unions and the factory were kind of owned by thugs and criminals and mobsters, and they wanted to set an example out of his dad. So that night he came home, and his dad had been murdered for crossing the picket line. And he instantly became the oldest man in the family at the age of 15 and had no choice. So he had already dropped out of school, started getting a job, and then realized that the only way to get an actual steady income that was enough to provide for his family was to lie about his age and enlist in the Navy at the age of 15.
Why did he pick the Navy over the other branches of service?
The true story is that he actually had been working part-time at an airport, and he was just doing odd jobs around the airport. And that's where he first got his first interest into planes and flying. That's where I think he really got his passion to want to go into the Navy to be a pilot. And he ended up not actually being a pilot, but a crew chief, which is kind of in charge of all the plane mechanics and everything. So, yeah, working young at an airport in Cadillac, Michigan, kind of just doing some odd jobs around the airport.
So you mentioned you learned of the story of a mountain being named after him, which we'll get to later, around Christmas of last year. So was the timeline really this quick? For a short film,
it was.
It's pretty amazing to get the story, write it out, and to film and shoot it and complete it pretty recently.
Yeah. It was definitely a very fast turnaround. And I wanted, it was just because I think my passion for this story and this film, I wanted to get it out to the world as fast as possible, I guess. So, yeah, I decided last Christmas after I heard the final story that I needed to start writing. So I started writing it, researching it, interviewing Lester and talking to other people, and probably took 4 or 5 months to officially write it, get the script out to about 16, 17 pages. And all while doing that, I was kind of gathering a team of producers and cinematographer and people along the way to help shoot this. And then we picked the deadline of the start of to film it June 21st, where we first started our production at Waukesha County Airport, where we had kind of rented out the corner of the airport and had a bunch of World War II planes fly in and start shooting that day. So, yeah, it was from Christmas to June 21st, so just under 6 months from the idea to writing to actually shooting it.
That's amazing. And I have to ask, I was curious about the airport. How did you manage to secure those vintage planes to be able to do this project with such authenticity?
Yeah. So, you know, that was the biggest thing when I was writing. And I was like, if I can't get these planes, it's crucial to the story. So I was like, I'll tackle the biggest challenge first, which I thought was getting World War II planes. And I came across a friend who was a pilot out west, and he reached out to some of his connections and found a pilot in Illinois who owned a vintage 1940s World War II plane and a Navy plane at that fact. I was going to take any plane, really, but it was a 1940s World War II plane. And he lives in Illinois, and the pilot was more than generous to fly up from Illinois for the day, land at Waukesha County Airport for the day, let us film and move his plane around, shoot all around it, and then fly out at the end of the day. It was pretty incredible. But locally, we had actually the Commemorative Air Force Wing of Wisconsin, which has a lot of vintage airplanes. They were very generous and able to give us 4 planes. And so they pulled them all out to the tarmac, and we kind of arranged the 5 total planes. And then it just so happened that one of the businesses on the Waukesha County Airport had a World War II Jeep with a turret. So it was a lot of just luck and just, you know, the universe telling us, yeah, here's a bunch of fun things to help, you know, really sell the aspect of the film being in the 1940s.
Now, you're a Milwaukee native and filmed a lot of this here in the greater Milwaukee area. So I kind of want to go into some of those key sets and details. You mentioned the Waukesha County Airport. But I'm also curious what cemetery you're at, and then what house was the Liptak house? Because there aren't many houses that, you know, some are remodeled and reconstructed, but this one has the classic, like, Cream City brick facade in front and the inside, of course, as well.
I'm so glad that you noticed that. Yeah, it was a lot of searching all around Milwaukee, because that was the biggest thing about shooting this is having the sets look real, having the locations look real, having everything be authentic. So we were lucky to find actually a Milwaukee County Historical Society in Greenfield called Trimborne Farms. It's this secluded, right in the middle of a bunch of residential homes. They got about 3 or 4 properties that are from the 1800s, 1850s to 1900s. And we were lucky enough to be able to film in that for the house and a lot of the other scenes as well. And then for the cemetery, we were actually filming that south of Miller Park by Lincoln. There's this cemetery right next to a factory called the Old Metal Shop, which is actually where we filmed a lot of different type of scenes. But it was a lot between Trimborne Farms and the Old Metal Factory. Has a ton of great locations, and there the entire officer scene was shot there, along with the picket line scene was shot there, and the cemetery right across the street.
Now, this short film kind of encompasses what he's gone through to get to the point of meeting with an officer to enlist. And with you writing it and obviously knowing the story personally through your uncle, was there anything that he told you that stood out that you had to include? Or were there any things that perhaps didn't quite fit into the story but is still a great aspect of his character and what he did?
Yeah, there were many things that he told me that were just too crazy to believe. One of them specifically was that his baptismal certificate was written in pencil. Like, to me, it just, and a lot of people who have like seen parts of the film said the same thing. It's like, well, that just seems too easy. But it's real. He said back then they didn't write him in pen, and that they didn't give birth in hospitals. So that a lot of the births were at home. So the only way of proving their age was when they got baptized at their local church. So the baptismal certificate being written in pencil was something really key that I wanted to keep 100% true. I had read a bunch of different stories, so I had taken a few aspects from other true stories of people who have enlisted, and one of them I thought was very unique was one of the kids said that he went to the local convenience store or general store, bought a bushel of bananas and a liter of milk, and chugged it because he had to make weight. And he went across the street, and then he made weight with help of the copious amounts of bananas and milk. So I added that as part of Lester's story for him to make weight.
Now, Lester Liptak had a very successful career in the Navy. He served, 24 years, had over 12,000 flight hours, obviously kept and sustained his career starting so young at 15. You know, you can't imagine that. But he also led an operation, Deep Freeze, that we referred to a bit earlier. So can you explain that, and how did that result in a mountain being named after your uncle?
Yeah, definitely. So this was the story that I heard about. I've heard about his discovery missions to Antarctica before, but it was the fact of the mountain I heard that he has named after him, which really helped me start this story. And during the 1950s, the U.S. Navy led an operation called Operation Deep Freeze, which went to Antarctica to help map and discover parts of Antarctica that had never been discovered before. And he was the crew chief on those planes. And one of his good friends, Gus Shin, is the first pilot to have ever landed an airplane on the South Pole, technically. So he was a crew chief, and, you know, it's these first times ever that anyone's ever landed a plane on ice, and it's his job to figure out the logistics of the plane and how to land and get off and just keep everything in a working manner. And on those missions, their plane actually crash-landed while discovering the highest range in Antarctica, and they crash-landed while discovering this range. Luckily, they survived and were able to get off Antarctica. One of those mountains, after the fact, have since been named after him, called Mount Liptak.
Now, he is the crew chief of a lot of aircraft. Did he ever express any regret of not being an official pilot when that was his main dream so young?
I don't think so. I think I would have to talk to him again. But I remember him saying and talking about how he had a dream of flying. But once I think he got into it, his dream kind of pivoted to the upkeep and maintenance of the plane and operation of the plane and the engines and everything. So I'd have to talk to him again. But I was pretty confident that he was very happy with being the crew chief. And yeah, he was a crew chief on multiple different engine planes and very, very happy with that.
Now, the main question with your uncle is, was he happy with this film?
Yeah, so that was the biggest thing. If there was one critic out there, I wanted him to be happy and proud of it. And I didn't want to have the film portray him in a light that wasn't accurate. So I showed it to him. And yeah, he said he cried throughout the film and was very honored that this film was made after him. And I feel incredibly honored to have him as an uncle and that I'm able to tell his story.
As you mentioned, his story is one of many of people who enlisted underage. So do you have plans for the film now that it's complete regarding, just a matter of people seeing it and others sharing their stories of family members or anyone they might know who had a similar situation?
Yeah, of course. And that was the idea behind the film, of how Lester's story is one of thousands. You know, this is just a single thread of a tapestry of so many stories of people that have enlisted underage. And I wanted to use his story to tell a much broader story. And I've read all these stories, and I would love to create a feature-length film. So the idea is that this is a short film that could be a feature-length film of Lester's story or of a much larger story encompassing multiple, you know, unique stories of kids who did enlist underage. The history, people have enlisted as young as 12, and it's just, it's so mind-boggling to think or to try to envision what these kids were, you know, a 12-year-old, you know, going to war. Just, you can't, it's hard to wrap your mind around it. So, you know, telling these stories, I think, is crucial because they haven't been told, and there's so many of them out there that can be told. So the idea right now is to send this out to as many festivals as possible. We've sent it out to a lot already, and we'll be continuing to send it out to more festivals around the state, country, world, and hopefully just tell this story to as many people as possible. And if someone along the line is interested in this story and would like to help make it a feature-length film, we're all excited and looking forward to that opportunity.
Well, you certainly give a great insight and depiction of just a small part of your uncle's story. So, Ryan Alsop, I want to thank you for sharing it with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Milwaukee filmmaker Ryan Alsop is the writer and director of the short film Mount Liptak, about his uncle, Navy veteran Lester Liptak. He spoke with Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find a link to more about the film at WUWM.com.